When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Apple back in the news. They have just announced the largest stock buyback in U.S. history. Their board just approved $110 billion. $110 billion. Billion with a B of their shares to be repurchased. I got to imagine it's going to make the shareholders happy. Got to imagine going to make the CEO happy. The board happy. Got to imagine it's going to make the wealthy happy. Now this on top of what was or what had been the largest stock buyback in history, the $100 billion that they authorized back in 2018. So you got to go, you know, you're looking at $210 billion with a B, to make the shareholders happier. Now, understand, these used to be illegal. And thank you, Ronald Reagan, for ensuring that, you know, we make stock buybacks great again, because they had been banned. Because they were an illegal manipulation of the market. That's what the theory was. I wonder why we did away. Oh, yeah. Trickle down, right? Also, Apple, aren't they under some kind of, Justice Department, case going on, being sued for the claims that they run an illegal monopoly? Isn't that part of this? So are they just trying to, we need a bunch of stuff. Because of Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, that $110 billion will have a 1% tax on it. Now, I argue should be much, much higher. Donald Trump says shouldn't exist, wants to undo the Inflation Reduction Act, of which this is part. Also today, good news on Thursday. You had Senators Smith from Minnesota, Markey from Massachusetts, Bob Casey from my neck of the woods, all out there pushing the Warehouse Worker Protection Act. Yeah, we're going to protect workers. The legislation is to protect warehouse workers by prohibiting dangerous work speed quotas that do lead to higher work injuries. And look, the reality is, there's a report out by the folks at the National Employment Law Project who point out that 1 in 15 Amazon workers sustains an injury. They point out that Amazon represents 79% of large warehouse employment, but responsible for 86% of all the injuries. That's kind of a big deal. Senator Tina Smith said, when workers have the power to come together and organize for better working conditions and safer working conditions, we all do better. Senator Markey came out and said, the Warehouse Worker Protection Act is about dignity, safety, and respect for the workers who make the companies run. And Senator Casey said when giant corporations use intrusive surveillance technology to track warehouse productivity, workers usually end up paying the price. He said workers are skipping breaks to meet quotas set by algorithms, putting their own safety and the safety of their colleagues at risk. And you go, yeah, are we surprised by this? It's all about the money. It's all about profit over people. And it's good to finally see some movement forward. Sherrod Brown was one of the original, is one of the original co-sponsors of this bill. I'm sure this will get through the Senate. I don't know about the House. We'll see what the Republicans have to say over there. But it is endorsed by the Teamsters Union, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, the National Employment Law Project, Athena Coalition, and Axfam America. And look, it should be endorsed by everyone who works. Because ultimately, we do want to have safer working conditions for all of our workers. But for me, the reality is, this is the reason you join a union. This is the reason you join and form a union. This is the reason that you sit down and collectively bargain for better conditions, safer conditions, more say on the job. But good on these senators and the members of Congress who have got a sister bill to go with it. Going to be interesting to see where this goes. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you always get these stories around Donald Trump rally time. Evidently, Trump was in Wisconsin for his big rally the other day. And welcomed a Milwaukee business owner up onto the stage. Her name is Shauna Gray. Talked about how much things were better when he was president, how much better her business was, you know, just how much better her customer, all this stuff. It was really a great story. And if you're the small business owner, you got to be thrilled that, hey, you know, I want to get that guy back because I want it the way it used to be. Only problem, you know, just one little teensy tiny little problem, is she opened her business last year in 2023. But again, can't make this stuff up. But our mainstream corporate controlled right-wing for-profit media, did they care? No, just business owner was better then. Yeah. But here's the thing. I mean, you know, we see all this stuff. Lies, more lies, disinformation. It's always been around and it's always here. You know, Jewish space lasers, idiotic impeachments, you name it. We got craziness. We've always had it. I'm here to share some thoughts on why now might be a little different and maybe what we should be doing to, well, combat some of this craziness. I've asked Carlos Alvarez Arenos to come talk with us. Carlos is the co-founder and chief communications officer with the newly founded American Sunlight Project. Carlos, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me. Really excited to be here.
So I look at this and, you know, you see all of this fake news. You see all of these claims that, you know, the wild, fantastic claims like, hey, my business was so much better when Donald Trump was president, even though I started it last year. And nobody seems to really, I don't know, grab the facts.
Yeah, I mean, look, kind of separate from what we're doing as an organization, I think the American political conversation has become kind of unrooted, right? Not just in terms of lies, but in terms of ridiculousness. You know, I mean, I remember a time when hiring an undocumented nanny would end your presidential ambitions or your bid to be on the on a cabinet or whatever. And now we're, you know, we're dealing with a presidential candidate, the candidate for a major political party who's facing multiple felony counts, is currently facing a criminal proceeding, and everybody's acting like it's normal. So I think we've seen an insane shift in our political conversation, and it's really become uprooted. And I think it, if nothing else, it's sort of demeaning to the history of this country and to the seriousness of the people that built it, right? And so it's one thing for this generation to sort of ride on the credit card of the greatest generation, but it's a different thing now for us to sort of demean the nation that they built and gave us, and the gift that they gave us and the sacrifices that they made, to take ourselves this unseriously, right?
No,
I think it's a new normal.
It is a new normal. And I want to point out for our viewers that you're wearing sunglasses, not because you're the co-founder of the American Sunlight Project, but because you had eye surgery. I just want to make sure that, because, the future is so bright, you're wearing shades. I hope so. Eye surgery is part of that. So tell me, why are we starting this American Sunlight Project? What was the catalyst behind it? And, what are you hoping, before we get into all the other stuff, what are you hoping to come out of this?
Yeah, so Nina Jankowicz, as you know, was appointed by President Biden to run the Disinformation Governance Board at the Department of Homeland Security. That was a board that was intended to align the U.S. government response to very serious threats to national security stemming from disinformation, particularly artificial intelligence and other forms of disinformation where the fake stuff starts to look so real that it's impossible to tell the difference. And so we're at an inflection point in history where this is no longer a conversation about people telling lies, like the business owner at the Trump rally, where, the kinds of things are kind of in bounds and weaponizing information, both sides do it, everybody campaigns, tough, and it's okay to be aggressive with information. And again, we've seen propaganda, we've seen a lot of other forms of misinformation, which is when people say the wrong thing, but without the intent to deceive, and then disinformation, where people take information and try to weaponize it to achieve an objective. We've seen that throughout history, and most of that kind of lives within bounds. But at this moment in time, we're at an inflection point where technology is making it possible, not just to lie, but to put words in other people's mouths, to basically create alternate realities. And we can imagine a scenario right now where a major crisis happens and you get 500 different AI-generated videos within minutes of the crisis hitting of the president saying 500 different things or some other policymaker. And I mean, you can imagine in the case, for example, if somebody reported that a nuclear power plant was experiencing some kind of meltdown, where 500 videos could create mass hysteria. And all of that could be done by Russia or China relatively easily right now. And nobody would be empowered to stop it, not to correct the record in real time, not to fix the thing before the confusion sets in and it creates panic. So we launched the American Sunlight Project, frankly, because we couldn't believe that nobody else was on this case. Our mission is to investigate and expose the people and networks and money driving disinformation, to protect the researchers doing research into mapping and understanding the threats, and then to educate the public and build resiliency against these threats by helping promote content validation, so that stuff like apps that tell you whether the video you're looking at is real or AI generated, hopefully getting the media companies to start validating each other, so that we can create a sort of a truth ecosystem where investigation and validation are happening in real time. And then finally, to get Congress and the White House to start doing smart things to sort of police this new normal in a way that protects civil liberties, which I think is central not only to our effort, but is central to any solution to this, has to sort of abide by the Constitution and ideally uphold our ideals, while dealing with the fact that these new technologies were democratized. They were given to us without real conversation. I mean, AI has been sort of unleashed on the world and nobody had any thought to like pre-think how to do it in a way that was responsible. Instead, we've sort of given the power to produce mass fake content to just about everybody on Earth. And now we have to sort of figure out how do we account for this? How do we manage this? And how do we prevent this from ending our democracy? And the reason it has that capability is because, I mean, it's very difficult to sustain a democracy if you can't trust public information.
No.
We've never tried it. And honestly, it would be it could end our democracy regardless of what happens this election.
No, and that's the scary prospect in all of this, and something that, you know, we've been talking about for a while on this program of, you know, why it is we're so far behind in all of this, and not just AI, but you know social media as a whole. You know, and I know everyone's saying, "Well, I have the right to free speech." Yeah, but you don't have the right to go out and make just complete and total BS that could cause, as you pointed out, you know, making claims of things happening that maybe didn't happen, exaggerating those, or maybe having wrong responses that would cause chaos in public and could harm people in their lives. I'm still amazed we're so far behind.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a function of hubris. And I always say that for the past 30 years, we've really leaned into the benefits of citizenship, but we've forgotten the responsibilities of citizenship, right? And people are just not showing up. I mean, I'll give you an example. We're seeing mass protests over what's happening in Gaza on college campuses today, which is a legitimate issue. It's a legitimate issue of concern. But I would argue that the state of our democracy and the future of this gift of a country that we've received should be equally, if not more important to us than any issue that we could protest over. And I haven't seen a single major protest about protecting this democracy. And so, to me, we need to sort of reprioritize and revalue what we have here. This is the greatest nation on Earth, and it's worth protecting. But that's going to take all of us stepping up and claiming it. And part of claiming it, for example, is doing your work, doing the reading, as I say, you know, doing the hard stuff, figuring out where your information is coming from, making sure it's validated, not just repeating something because it feeds your bias. Because an additional problem of AI that most people don't realize is, not only can AI generate the content that looks real, it can also help the maker of that content target people with content that feeds their pre-existing biases. And then it can do so iteratively. So every time out, it does it better. And the idea is, we're already polarized. And imagine somebody sending you a video that you really want to believe because it affirms everything that you think is true, a conspiracy theory or some dumb idea that you really passionately believe, and then you get the perfect video that says this is the proof of what you believe, and then suddenly we're in a situation where you're now completely sold on something and you've done no work to validate it, and you've now become a weapon for bad actors. And again, you don't even have to have bad intentions here. You can just be a regular citizen who's feeling very validated and is propagating a lot of toxic stuff that can cause a lot of harm. And as you said, there are rights, my rights begin end where your rights begin. We have to share the space. And part of sharing the space is owning our responsibility as citizens. And right now we're adding to that responsibility because of this technology, but we're not accepting that additional responsibility. We're not even accepting our basic responsibility. I mean, look at the number of people who vote or the percentage of people who go out and vote. So if we're not ready to claim it, then this is just going to be a tougher world to govern. And we have to step up and govern it and govern ourselves, because that's ultimately the point of the American experiment.
No, you're so spot on. And the point that you made, and it's something that we've talked about on this show a lot, is the idea of, if you want to change people's minds and their hearts, it's time and repetition. And I don't necessarily believe people are mean or evil or bad for believing some of the things that they do. It's just that they've had their bias confirmed by these algorithms that we don't even know exist in most times. And, you know, I look at this dust up over TikTok. You know, I think back to when I was a kid. I can't imagine my parents and grandparents allowing a direct line of video crack into my bedroom from the Soviet Union. It's amazing to me that there's this fight over the Communist Party of China having that kind of access to our kids.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, private company ownership in China is a different construct than what we understand here in the United States. The way that the Chinese can take information and weaponize it against us has to be analyzed. It's a legitimate threat. I'm not sure banning it is the answer. I don't know. A divestment might be the answer. I don't know. But But the reality is that this is a problem that's going to get worse. That said, there is, vis-a-vis China in particular, there is a historical parallel, which is the fight over intellectual property. At first, the Chinese would steal all of our intellectual property and repurpose it. But eventually, they started generating enough of their own where their incentive structure changed, and they wanted to protect their stuff from others. And so at that point, it became politically possible for them to defend our IP in order to protect their own. And I think we may see a time when the Chinese party is just as worried as we are, if not more, about this information and the power that that would have to upend their system, where they might be inclined to make a big political deal on this issue. That said, is it going to happen before the election? Probably not. Are we not seeing already, in terms of these protests on Gaza and in others, the New York Times just published an article today about how Russia and China are sort of triggering these hotbed of protests and other Gen Z type through TikTok and other means of getting people excited about things and passionate about things and getting them out there. Those will metastasize. And it's not just going to be Russia or China. It's going to be millions of people around the world that just for fun could start messing with the United States. And it'll be very difficult for us to manage our information ecosystem or to protect it. And so the analogy I always draw, it'll be like, imagine if your spam folder came to life. That could become the American information ecosystem ahead of this election.
Yeah.
And no, we have like thousands of different videos of just about everything.
No, know? And look, you know, the one thing that Trump and his cronies brought is this idea of alternative facts, that we can have our own facts and you can have your own facts and never the two shall marry. So the question then becomes, how can individuals critically evaluate this information that's coming in? How can they, you know, distinguish between fact, fiction, or, you know, AI? How do we do this in an era where our government seems incapable of getting anything done on this issue? How can individuals, you know, through filters or common sense or whatever, how can they get through this in this moment?
Well, I think there's a few things. First, we have to support efforts like what Adobe's doing. Adobe is doing great content validation, and they're trying to bring that to mass market. And we as a population should help them do that. And basically, their program allows you to see whether the video you're looking at is real or AI generated. That's a simple technological tool. We're seeing as an organization that a lot of other tools of that nature are coming online. So make sure you use those. As you said, the major challenge against this problem is that it's hard to map. We have a lot of researchers working on disinformation that are currently too scared to do their jobs because Jim Jordan and the weaponization subcommittee of the Judiciary Committee in the House is blocking their work by subpoenaing them and intimidating them. And these are academics, so they're very susceptible to intimidation. They're not used to political fights. So we need to get Jim Jordan off their back. Our Congress should not be the biggest blockade against us defending against probably the greatest existential threat in a generation. But then beyond that, and this is what I say to everybody, we just have to do the work of citizenry. And right now that means stepping up and checking our sources and checking and making sure we're doing the reading, essentially the hard, trying to understand things, trying to get to the bottom, trying to contextualize, not repeating something just because it sounds good or it sounds right. These are sort of basic information hygiene things that people should be doing. To make sure you question everything before you repost it. Make sure that that you listen and that you have the humility to be wrong. These are foundational things, and they sound super simple, but in fact, the fact that we don't do them is the reason that a lot of this stuff metastasizes. And then over time, we have to educate each other. The part of what we're going to do as an organization is do large public campaigns to teach people about these threats so that they can start knowing what to look for and start looking for it. But it's ultimately on all of us as citizens to protect our country from a threat that, again, is decentralized. This is not something that the government can solve or that civil society can solve. This is a thing that's going to require all of us participating and owning that responsibility of citizenship, which I mentioned, maybe for the first time in this generation. And so we're going to have to get used to doing harder work and fighting for this thing that we love Otherwise, we're going to lose it, and that would be a really terrible, terrible outcome.
I'm right there with you. So, last question I've got for you: how do we then strike a balance between combating disinformation and protecting people's free speech? Especially in this digital age where there is so much, out there. And look, a lot of actors who aren't out there for good reasons. They're out there either for attention, to get clicks, or to to make money, or just to cause chaos. Because I think a lot of people believe that, the other person on the other end, this other anonymous person, cares as much about this issue as I do. When the reality is, I don't know that that's even remotely close to the truth.
Yeah, the research, first of all, tells us that most disinformation comes from a very small number of sources. So it is not a situation where you're fighting the good fight against somebody equally passionate about something as you are. You're fighting an algorithm, and you're fighting bad actors in a lot of cases. And you're predestined to lose because you're part of the, it's a data acquisition. And whether you participate actively or not, they can infer a lot about you just from the broader data set, right? So they just want to get to know you better, and they want to manipulate you, and they want to press your buttons. So your first step as a citizen has to be, I need to be more disciplined and more mature, and I need to receive information more critically. That's part one. But part two is, in terms of rights, this is, we need to get smarter about how we talk about the fight against disinformation. Because when Jim Jordan says we're trying to censor people, that's a ridiculous notion. If there's 500 videos of the president saying 500 different things versus one video that is what he actually said, the truth is what he said. Everything else is a lie. And the idea that you mentioned previously, that we're changing the concept of truth and fiction in order to make them relative, is part of this super immature trend that we have towards wanting to be right and then saying, your truth is not my truth. With all due respect, if we can't go back to a foundational sense that the truth is what happens in real life and fiction is everything else that does not, and particularly when it's being manufactured, if we can't go back to that, then we've already lost, right? Yeah. And so that's the most important construct in democracy. We're going to have to protect it. We're going to have to, excuse my language, get off our asses as citizens and start doing the harder work that the moment requires. Because frankly, this technology was unleashed upon us, and we didn't have any moment to internalize it, to understand it. It is existentially threatening. And if we don't do the work and stand up for our country, we're going to lose our country. And then when we lose it, last week I was rewatching Band of Brothers, just thinking to myself, the enormity of that sacrifice, and we are really taking ourselves this unseriously. Like, is this what's worthy of what was given to us, of that massive gift of fighting fascism in Germany, only to be reconsidering it here because we're angry about what exactly? Because I'm from the Dominican Republic. I grew up under Joaquin Balaguer, who was a democratically elected dictator, essentially. He was what Donald Trump wants to be. And I can tell you, that is not a future anybody in this country wants. I've lived it, where they just shoot you in the back of the head and throw you in the back of a pickup truck, and you are now disappeared. You never existed. I've lived that. I've seen that with my own eyes. So I just think we need to take ourselves more seriously, and we need to take this country more seriously, and we need to have some dignity, some integrity, some respect, not just for ourselves, but for our ancestors, for the people who gave us this amazing gift. And if we don't stand up for it now, we're going to lose it. And we're going to lose it for the dumbest possible reasons. And that would really be the most tragic end to the most beautiful experiment in self-governance ever attempted.
Carlos, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. I want you to come back early and often. This is a fight that's going to continue for quite some time. I appreciate the time.
I would be happy to come back anytime. Thank you for the time.
Carlos Alvarez Arenos, co-founder and chief communications officer there at the American Sunlight Project, americansunlight.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the incredible work that they're doing. You can check that out. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, interesting Washington Post story. Evidently, out of the whole Trump trial in Manhattan, the one thing that I think everyone agrees on is nobody likes Michael Cohen. That's the headline. One thing already clear. Nobody likes Michael Cohen. In fact, a key witness, one of the key hush money witnesses that nobody likes. He's been described as a jerk, difficult, and, hopeless. And all the while, live streaming on TikTok. Because, look, you need a job, man. You need a job. And here to share some thoughts on, what's going on in New York? And why does no one like Michael Cohen? I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. So why poor Michael? Why the fixer? Why the bully? Why does nobody like him?
I mean, it seems like the way that they were talking about him in court was exactly the way that we understood him to be in 2016, 17, 18, before he essentially got screwed by Donald Trump, right? I mean, he was the fixer. He did everything that Trump wanted. He would break legs, all of the things. And it's interesting because I remember the stories, but I never knew him then. I never met him then. And so, I mean, what he has become just in private conversations is just, he's funny. He's rational. Yeah, he's pissed, but welcome to America. It's very strange, I think, to reconcile this other than the fact that I think if you look at Trump's lawyer, Todd Blanche, the guy who's his lawyer right now in Manhattan, you kind of see what Donald Trump requires of his lawyers. Like, it doesn't really make sense for somebody to get really combative with a witness that, isn't really that big of a deal, but that's kind of what happened in trial today on Thursday is, it was Todd Blanche and Emile Beauvais who were just hammering this lawyer who used to work for Stormy Daniels. And the thing is he never met Donald Trump. He didn't have anything to do with any of the business records of Donald Trump, which is what this trial is about. All the lawyers had to go up there and do is say, you didn't meet him, you didn't talk to him, you know nothing about his business records and if he falsified them or not, right? And he'd be like, no, be like, we're done with you. And instead, like, they really went after this guy and just sort of like tried to impugn his character, talked about him being sleazy and working for all of these people. And it's like, what? There's no real logical legal point to that, except if Donald Trump makes you do it.
Right.
Because he's the guy writing the check. And it, so I wonder how much of that persona of Cohen was based off of years and years and years of demands from Trump. And the way that he describes it now is very much like being in a cult. And, you know, so it's interesting sort of to look at it from the perspective of, you know, I can see, you know, why people would say this, but man, has he changed. And I mean, honestly, like, if you're getting thrown in jail for your boss,
I was going to say prison,
that'll do it.
Yeah, prison has a way of doing that to people.
Right. I mean, testifying before Congress, going to prison, ending up in, you know, fighting the Justice Department. Like, this dude's life has been turned upside down and inside out. And, you know, so I get how much that can change you. And then coming out of something he describes as a cult, too.
Yeah, but so, you know, look, I've always thought, you know, you look at Trump. Trump just doesn't want to win. He wants to humiliate the other side. Yeah. And I've known people like that throughout my life who, you know, it's not about the competition. It's not about winning or losing. It's about making you look bad. It's about, mm-hmm. you know, eviscerating your opponent and, you know, belittling them. So am I surprised that Trump's found a whole cadre of other attorneys willing to do that? No, not at all.
And what's interesting is the first real day of the trial, I don't know if you remember, Todd Blanche basically got in trouble by the judge who was saying, you know, Mr. Blanche, you're losing credibility here. And that was because he was really acting out in this boisterous sort of I don't know, like shouty New York lawyer that I think
belligerent
Trump wanted to see as a caricature,
yeah.
like his own little Roy Cohn. And I think he was actually worse on Thursday in the way that he was talking in court. So, I mean, it's just, it's wild to me, but you have to wonder, like, does Judge Juan Mershon know this? Does he understand this? Because he didn't admonish him today on Thursday. He didn't admonish anybody all week, in fact, being weird.
So let me ask you then, because, you know, on Wednesday you had Trump, you know, back on the campaign trail where he went after the judge. You know, saying there's no crime here. I have a crooked judge. He's a totally conflicted judge. You know, you would think that, you know, something.
So with the judge, I think he can attack the judge. I think he can attack.
Yeah, I know you can. I know you can. But should you?
No, you definitely shouldn't. But I wonder, I mean, so there's this kind of back and forth that I keep having in my head about, does he want to go to prison to become the victim and to raise more money, or can he just truly not control himself? And I honestly can't decide because I really do believe that there is a part of him that is terrified of prison. Because, I mean, come on.
There's a part of me that's terrified of prison.
Right? So, I don't know if he's trying to antagonize the judge as some sort of defense strategy for an appeal. I'm not really certain.
Yeah.
But the judge is the one who's going to give him the sentence. The jury is going to decide the verdict, but the judge gets to decide whether you're going to Rikers or not. So I'd be kissing his butt.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, here's the thing. And I get a kick out of this because, you know, Trump said he wanted to testify. He promised he was going to testify. He was going to do it. And I was like, you know, when he said that, when that came out, I'm like, he's not going to, no lawyer who has any sense would put him on the stand. But now Trump's kind of walking back from that. He's going to testify things saying that he can't because of his gag order. That's not true, is it?
No, it's not even close to true. And what's hilarious is, I mean, what I think is happening is his lawyers are probably telling him, you know, you can't testify. And so he's got to come up with some way to save face. It's exactly like what happened with E. Jean Carroll trial, where he had said over and over and over again, I'm going to go defend myself. I'm going to show up and say my piece. And by golly, he got on the stand, but he sure as heck didn't say much. And there's a reason for that. So I think the major thing that we'll see in the next couple of weeks is people like Michael Cohen, the Lincoln Project, George Conway, all of those guys are going to be the troll to Donald Trump and ask him, like, Donald, what's up, man? Why aren't you testifying? Don't you want to defend yourself? And they will get under his skin. I mean, God bless him. If the Lincoln Project did an ad just targeted to the Manhattan audience on Fox News and just mess with him, trying to get him to testify, it would work. And it's just, he is that easy to manipulate.
Yeah. No, and that's frightening. It really is. Because one of the things that I hope people are noticing, he whines a lot. I mean, no, look, I understand being angry. I understand, you know, wanting to lash out, but it's really, really whiny.
Yeah, for somebody who's such a strong, manly man.
Yeah.
He sure acts like a whiny little baby.
Yeah.
A lot.
Thanks for not going the full Monty there.
And truly, one of the stories that I heard this week was from the co-creator of Axios did an interview where he said he was talking to a bunch of Trump campaign people, and that Trump has basically reckoned with the idea that he is never going to get any female voters this election, that he's just out whenever it comes to the women, because women are going to show up for, for the anti-abortion votes.
Yeah, but
he just assumes, like, I can't win those women.
But you so here's the thing: you're not going to win them when you're sending Jason Miller out to be the guy who's saying, "Hey, he doesn't." Who's saying that Trump doesn't want to monitor? Or how do you say he's going to let states monitor women's pregnancies? So that thing, but Trump isn't going to do it. This is a guy who, correct me if I'm wrong, reportedly slipped a morning after pill into his pregnant girlfriend's drink.
Reportedly. And even now, like, the sad thing is AJ Delgado, who was working on the Trump campaign at the time, had an affair with Miller, got pregnant. And now it's weird because Jason Miller acknowledges, like, oh, I have a son, and all of this stuff. But then when she's asking for help and trying to figure out, how she's going to make it and take care of a kid, and what, especially after she got suddenly fired by the Trump campaign, after people found out she was pregnant from Jason Miller's baby. I mean, like, all of these things have happened to her, and she's taking this stuff to court asking, like, what the hell, and she doesn't have all these high powered lawyers that people like Michael Cohen and, everybody else does. And so of all of the women who, made her choice, had a baby the way that right-wing conservatives love, and yet again, we're leaving them in the dirt.
Well, look, and again, pro birth, not pro life. But my point is, and look, I'm not going to jump into the middle of all of his antics, but
of which there are many,
of which reportedly there are many. I don't see him
allegedly.
As the face. Allegedly, there you go. I don't see him as the face of talking to women about their reproductive rights. I'm just saying.
No, I agree. But boy, he was in court on Thursday and I think Tuesday too. Trump has had a couple of family members, or one family member. He had Eric show up. This whole time, nobody showed up at any of his trials for him. The kids were there, the heirs, Eric and Don Jr. were there because they had to testify. But, he hasn't had many allies that have showed up for him.
No.
That kind of changed, I think, because he behind the scenes started complaining to people, nobody's there fighting for me. And so now you've got people like Ken Paxton flew in from Texas, to appear there with Trump. Jason Miller was there. You got to wonder how long it's going to take before Marge Three Toes shows up and a bunch of other Republicans start, coming to court.
Is this going to be the way that you... Because evidently it's being reported that, we're doing an apprentice style search for VP. And, you know, one of my thoughts was, you know, I see this Christy Noem who's still out there defending her, shooting a dog.
And a goat.
Yeah, and a goat. And my thought was, does this help her move up the list? Or is this a down the list thing? Because Trump evidently hates dogs. So does this play in, or is she completely off the list?
So I'm kind of two minds. Like, I immediately thought that this would be really good for her. That Trump would really love this for the exact reason that you said, that Donald Trump hates dogs. Alyssa Farah Griffin on The View said that the one thing that she thinks is this will repel him from her because it's just weird. And he doesn't really understand the lifestyle of working on a farm or being on a farm or shooting anything. I doubt he's ever really actually shot a gun. I think he just bought one for the first time, like last summer or something like that. So,
and they're going to take it away this summer.
Right. That's the question. He bought it as somebody who is under indictment. So the second he gets convicted, they're going to have to come and take his firearm. But yeah, it's hard to tell because, you know, she's also very pretty and you know how he feels about that. But that was one of the things where I feel like Carrie Lake was spending too much time at Mar-a-Lago and Melania really hated it and got her out pretty fast. And so you have to wonder, like, is Melania just going to put the kibosh on this and be like, no pretty girls? And he's, you know, just going to be like, but I'll like the puppy killer, you know?
No, I don't see how anyone does. I mean, that's a negative. And look, I understand people who work on farms. That's part of that culture. But I don't know. Did you go out and you be proud of that? I just not knowing that everyone else is going, not a good thing.
I mean, I think you feel like there are all of these stories, right, of animals on farms and ranches who have been injured and are near death, and so the humane thing to do, the only way to respond is to kill them, and the heartbreak that the owner has of doing it. This was a woman who talked about how much she hated the stupid dog, lured the dog to a gravel pit and shot it in its face. And that is completely different. And I think people look at that and they're like, that is the one issue that I feel like has brought the country together for the first time ever, is everybody's like, yeah, that's not right. That's not cool. You don't shoot the dog in the face. No. Just give it away. Give it to somebody.
Yeah. And part of me goes, Trump doesn't want her around because I might shoot him in the face.
I mean, remember Dick Cheney?
Right. There you go. Let's move over to Congress. Are Democrats going to save Mike Johnson again? Is that going to happen?
I think they probably are. The way that they're going to do it is they're not going to vote to support Mike Johnson. The Marge and the other folks are going to vote to motion to vacate the chair. And there will be a second. There will be a vote on whether to do it. And the Democrats are going to request that the motion be tabled. And then all the Democrats and everybody else are going to support tabling the motion, and Marge is going to lose it. So they won't actually be voting him into the speakership in any way. And it's really just a procedural kind of BS thing. And we talked to a couple of members of Congress this week where a lot of them were like, look, you know, it doesn't help us to destabilize the House again. And we have fought through, you know, the slog, the swamp of these idiots, you know, basically they're winning by stopping the government. And at the very least, they managed to be able to get Johnson to understand that there are serious issues and that they have to do something about them. Like he used to be the most anti-Ukraine funding guy ever. And then all of a sudden he said, well, they give me a security briefing and now I feel like maybe we need to pay for this. And it's like, yeah, imagine that. Imagine being given a little bit of information.
Right. So the answer here is because there's part of me that goes, just let the Republicans do what they're going to do to themselves. You know, that whole give them enough rope. But you make an interesting argument. The punishment, making them work. That is an interesting argument. Making them show up and do their job seems like an interesting punishment.
Well, we have the farm bill needs to be authorized by the end of the year. I mean, we have a couple of things that have to happen in the next few months that will, the FAA needs to be reauthorized. Right. Like, these are all things that will stop the country if they're not handled. And so if, you know, if Republicans don't want to show up, then they can just go home to their districts and campaign and leave Democrats and Mike Johnson to do the work for them.
Yeah. Now, Mitch McConnell says he's ready for the chaos in the House to end. And, you know, to be honest, I'm ready for it to end, too, January 20th or January of 2025 when Democrats take over, because I think that's what he really meant. He's hoping Democrats will take over because at least the House will be functional.
I think that as well. But I think also he has more power when if Democrats maintain the Senate, because nobody wants to work with the right wing idiots. And if you have a right wing nutter who's in charge of the Senate caucus, like, Democrats aren't going to work with that idiot.
Point.
But they'll talk to Mitch McConnell because they've dealt with, you know, that idiot for decades. So they know how he works and they know how he
got
to, you know, move him and bribe him or whatever they do.
Finally, Lauren Boebert's back in the news.
Bless her heart.
Bobo's back.
So there, I guess she showed up at a mega church and started giving like a super political speech from the pulpit. And it's, you know, it's interesting that a lot of these churches get away with talking about politics just by having somebody else do it for them, not right. having the pastor actually do it. And so she, you know, she gave a big speech, and of all people who wrote about it, there was somebody from the New York Times who was following her around and talking to folks in the new district. You know, she had to move to another district. She was about to lose the seat. And a lot of folks, even in the new district, are like, yeah, no, we don't like her either. We don't want to have anything to do with her either. But the interesting way that he described her was just like a brand of feral conservatism. And I was like, that is the best term for the MAGA caucus. That is absolutely what they are. And I mean, I don't know what a lot of people, you know, have issues with feral hogs. I'm not saying you do the same thing in that case to your feral conservative in any way, but you know, thank God they're not facing Christie Noem.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, I'm hoping that Tricia Calvarese, who's running in that fourth congressional district in Colorado, wins the primary in June. I think it's the 25th of June, and then goes on and sends Bobo packing. But, you know, I got to tell you, I liked Tricia. She's got a great story, and I hope folks in that district will look at her. But as always, Sarah, I appreciate the time. Great stuff.
Thank you so much. Have an awesome weekend.
Our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out her work, rawstory.com, the website. Back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the birthday of folk musician Pete Seeger. Seeger and his music would become staples of the U.S. labor movement. He was born into a musical family. His father was a scholar of musicology, and his mother was a concert violinist. During the 1940s, Pete Seeger joined with folk music legend Woody Guthrie to form the Almanac Singers. The band traveled the country supporting the Congress of Industrial Organizations. At picket lines, union meetings, and workers' rallies, Pete Seeger was there providing the music for the movement. In the 1950s, Seeger became the target of the anti-communist hysteria that swept the nation. He was blacklisted, shows were canceled, he lost a recording contract. Yet despite this repression, Seeger kept singing the songs of working people and standing up for justice. During the 1960s, the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, and the environmental movement all marched to Pete Seeger tunes. When Seeger died at the age of 94, labor leader Jen Fuentes reflected on the impact of his music in an article in USA Today. She said, "These songs are what allowed workers to sustain themselves during times of adversity. He's a legend in the labor movement for his folk music that has spoken to the labor struggles throughout the year."
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Which side are you on?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Wednesday, Trump was back on the campaign trail in Freeland, Michigan. Held a rally there in Freeland, Michigan. And one of the things that he started off with, attacking auto workers and attacking the United Auto Workers president, Sean Fain. And I got to tell you, my first thought was, as I'm listening to him ramble on about the UAW leader, my first thought was, if Trump is attacking your union's leader, he's the right guy to be the leader. He's going to be the guy. That's your leader right there. Because look, Trump has shown us who he is. Trump has told us who he is. He's shown us who he is. You look at the years that he was in office. What did he do that actually helped working people? That would be nothing. There was a lot of talk. And again, there's a difference between rhetoric and bloviating and actually doing. There were a lot of photo ops. There was a lot of cute little pictures of him wearing hard hats and driving a truck. There was all kinds of stuff. But what his actions were dangerous. They were destroying and rewriting our labor laws to benefit employers and the very wealthy. So, you know, again, I go back to this idea of, you know, him being a wannabe dictator. And as it was reminded to me on May Day 1933, Adolf Hitler held a massive May Day rally to celebrate labor. And the next day, outlawed all trade unions, rounded up all of their leaders, took their money. You know, so if you're a union guy, kind of, I think, or woman, remember this. Because I know everyone wants to think that this is like any other presidential election. Sorry, it's not. Trump wants to be a dictator. He wants to have absolute control. And if you look at the reality, what they're talking about with this Project 2025 and Schedule F and all of this, this time they're not going to let it go to waste if they get the chance. Also, on the Truth Socials, the Donald calling out that fake news. He truthed out, contrary to fake news media, "I don't fall asleep during the crooked DA's witch hunt, especially not today. I simply close my beautiful blue eyes sometimes, listen intensely, and take it all in." Yeah, he closes his beautiful blue eyes. Now, the reality is, here's a guy who, if you listen to the speeches this week, he's pimping the violence again. He's out there telling people, you know, if the only way I'm, you know, if it's not a fair election, you know, could be, you know. What did he tell the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel? "If everything's honest, I'd gladly accept the results. If it's not, you have to fight for the right of the country." You know, look, this isn't dog whistle. This is a directive. Make no mistake. This guy is telling his supporters flat out, if I don't win, violence. That's the reality. Take things into your own hands. And look, he's given the cover that anything else would be, well, how did he put it? Doing a disservice to the country. So he's promoting political violence as if it's in the interest of saving the country. That's frightening. Frightening stuff. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Make sure you grab the podcast or freespeech.org for the video. As always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
email Rick. At Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.